The Emperor of Atlantis is a one-act opera composed by Victor Ullmann. Ullmann was a German-Czech composer who died in Auschwitz in 1944. As such, his is a sad story. There's no escaping that. But this opera is not sad, which is extraordinary, because Ullmann composed it while he was a prisoner in the concentration camp of Terezin, not long before he was shipped off to Auschwitz. It's also extraordinary that we can hear the opera at all, because it was lost for some 3 decades until it was discovered in a London attic in the 1970s. Now, the Boston Lyric Opera is presenting Victor Ullmann's Emperor of Atlantis, or Death Quits, starting tonight. The BLO is the first major American opera company in New England to present the work, which is seldom produced anywhere in the U.S. Esther Nelson is the general and artistic director of the Boston Lyric Opera. She says Victor Ullmann was born in 1898 in Czechoslovakia and got his start in music early on.
He was a very gifted young man. He was a student of Zemlinsky, another well-known composer, friend of Mahler, and belonged to a very active group of artists that really were instrumental in the movement of the 20th century music.
I read this about him, speaking of that movement. He was considered the first composer to bridge the historical musical impasse precipitated by the crisis of tonality, beginning of the 20th century. Can you demystify that for me?
Well, I think a lot of people referred, when they write about that, probably refer to the 12-tone system. And they were experimental, avant-garde, if you will, and looked at music in a whole new way in terms of how you create sound, and wanted to burst the confinements of structure, and as such, I think, not different from any other of the arts, whether it was in the visual arts or even in film and in literature in general.
Now, in 1942, he and his wife were deported to Terezin, a concentration camp north of Prague, and this is where he actually composed the work that we're talking about today, The Emperor of Atlantis. Let's talk about this briefly. It tells the story about an evil emperor, a tyrannical ruler who rules over a world that's forgotten how to enjoy life, forgotten how to accept death. The emperor declares a great war of all against all. Then what happens?
Well, the emperor, he's tyrannical, and it's a totalitarian system. So he declares the war of all wars to essentially have the entire world under his control. But the war isn't going his way. In fact, he's beginning to lose war. So he also isolates him completely at that point. He is in a bunker, essentially, or in a palace, it was called then. And so he communicates with the world and his people, if you will, only by telephone. So it's obviously a reference also to the regime. You have to remember 1943, things even the inmates in a Terezin probably knew that Hitler's war was not going quite the way that he had intended. And he, too, was beginning to isolate himself. Mm. So the Emperor of Atlantis declares all-out war. But it isn't going his way, as I said. And he finally declares as a proclamation where he recruits all people, young, old, to participate in this war. And he also says death will be his ally in this war. It is at that point that death says, who is in despair as it is, because that is not the kind of war that he remembers of the old days. And at that point, he breaks his sword and says, I am not a partner in this. This is a crime. And he abdicates. He quits.
Mm. So he even loses the participation of death, this emperor.
Death is disgusted, and he loses. And death, in fact, quits. And slowly it occurs that, in fact, no one is dying anymore because death is no longer around. So you can fight all the wars you want if no one dies anymore. That's no good either. And eventually death returns and the emperor invites death back. And the death agrees to come back, provided the empress is first guest.
Hmm. It's amazing on a couple of levels, isn't it? I mean, it's an opera full of hope, full of life, because to me it's amazing that it's so life-affirming, which is extraordinary given where he wrote this and under what conditions he wrote it.
I think that is what's so amazing. First of all, the music is very rich in very many different styles, highly accessible. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of humor in this, and it is about death, and I think in some ways dealing with death in such a way that you it's part of life and you should actually not be afraid of death. Mm. So I think this is an opera with a message for the prisoners of terror scene in many, many ways.
Mm. Can we play something and tell us about it? You brought in some clips here.
In fact, there are two soldiers. One is a girl soldier and the other one is a soldier. And they're sort of the dark side moving into the light side, because as they're fighting and they cannot die, they realize the absurdity of it all and they fall in love, which is, of course, the one emotion that is absolutely not permitted. And it's this beautiful duet, life-affirming, about when the shadows part, there is light.
It is beautiful. Another piece of this story that needs to be told is how we almost lost this opera forever. Ullmann and it's Peter Keen were both sent to the gas chambers in Auschwitz where they perished. The opera disappears until the mid-1970s. What happened? Who found it?
It was found by a family member, I believe, a descendant of a friend to whom Ullmann gave his score. And it was found in the early 70s and then brought to the attention of a conductor who took it upon himself to restore the piece. And his name is Kerry Woodward, and he, in fact, performed it, but largely made his own edition, and he performed it in the mid-70s in Holland. And that was the first time that this work surfaced at all, and subsequently is actually being restored to its original. And what we are doing is, in fact, the original of Ullmann.
Now, it's a short opera, which I gather is one reason why it's performed so rarely?
For producers, it's a dilemma, because it's actually slightly under an hour, and opera audiences in particular are used to having something a little bit longer for the ticket that they purchase. The problem for a producer is, what do you pair with this? Because essentially for me as a producer, the piece itself wants to be paired with a comedy. And you don't want to add something to the end of it, because it has such a beautiful closing and it is such a catharsis. You don't want to add anything to that. So you really are looking for something to put in front of it. And there I will say the circumstances, the tragic circumstances here do come into play for the producer. And it needs to be something that is sensitive, that's something that works with the opera itself. And it seemed to me this a perfect moment to link this to a living composer of today who might be inspired to some extent by this work, but I think it bridges this life-affirming momentum of the Emperor of Atlantis.
So to solve this problem, you actually commissioned another short piece, and let's bring another voice into this conversation, Richard Bodwin, an American composer, lecturer of music at Harvard. He's also here in the studio. Richard, good to have you.
Thanks.
So you were invited to write something of a companion piece, a short 20-minute opera. Tell us about the piece. Is it a prologue? Is it related to the original Ullmann opera?
My piece, which is called The After Image, is a chamber opera in and of itself that is meant to be performed just before the Ullmann begins. When they asked me for such a commission, it's an interesting place to be in, because one has the feeling with the Ullmann that something has been left behind. Hmm. I mean, when we play any composer's music, it's a remnant of them. But with the Ullmann, it really feels like perhaps the most important part of him. And I started to think a great deal about what is left behind, particularly from war. And I started to think about photography. At the time the commission came through, I was in London, and I went to the Imperial War Museum, and I read some diaries of war photographers. People who give to us essentially the objects that we use to memorialize the witnesses of war. And I didn't use any of that in the libretto, but it got me thinking along the lines of not to write a piece that was about the Second World War or about Ullmann, but in fact what it is to be alive in 2011 and to be reflecting on our own past and the past of our relatives, many of whom we're losing, who've lived through this experience, and what photographs mean in terms of how we make those memories.
So it features two characters, a daughter and a photograph of her father, correct, who has passed on?
That's correct. I don't know if that's new in the history of opera, but certainly this character is not meant to be a ghost or a memory, but is in fact a photograph. And what he sings, the photograph of the father, he sings from the perspective of being a photograph.
Question, your mother is Polish and left Poland in the 1960s. Did your background influence the composition in any way and the relationship to Ullmann's experience?
Yes, certainly. I grew up in a house with my mother and father, but also my grandmother, who came at the same time my mother did. And the questions of what happens during the war, what happened in a country during and after, to the first generation person, they might not all be answered, and in quite some of them are still quite mysterious. And I think part of the piece that I've written here is an investigation of what it is to remember people who you have unsatisfactory information about or incomplete information about. I mean, when we see a photograph of Ullmann, for example, we remember him even though we realize at that moment how little we know and how his score is also like a photograph. I mean, the Biello performing his opera is a way of looking at a photograph of Ullmann, albeit a musical one. And so my piece with the daughter looking at the photograph of her father has links to the way we use objects on paper, be they photographs or scores, to essentially be with people who aren't here.
Mm. Esther Nelson, I'd like to bring you back in the conversation. What made you decide to produce this opera? Why now?
It's been on my mind for some time, and I feel that particularly now it occurred to me as 2.5 years ago, you know, the economy bombed terribly, and I actually at the time read quite a bit about Ullmann. Here we were complaining and worrying about the disasters that befall us and the tragedies, and it's all relative in the end, isn't it, when you look at what life-affirming work came out of these camps. I think it puts it into perspective.
Well, tell us, give us some advice about how to end this segment. We want to end with music. What are we going to hear?
Towards the end, I would suggest that we hear the final chorale. It is based on Luther's A Mighty Fortress. That, of course, had a lot of symbolic meaning at the time of the Reformation in terms of countering accepted standard systems, political or clerical.
Well, then let's go out on that. And I want to thank you both so much for coming in. Richard Baudouin, thank you.
You're welcome.
And Esther Nelson, thank you very much. Esther Nelson is General and Artistic Director of the Boston Lyric Opera, which will present Victor Ullmann's The Emperor of Atlantis, or Death Quits, tonight. Also part of tonight's program, composer Richard Baudouin's The Afterimage. The bill will be at the BLO through February 5th.
Well, coming up tomorrow on Radio Boston, maybe you thought the days of dumping in Boston Harbor were long over. But with so much snow clogging the streets, Boston has already trucked away over 37,000 tons of it. There's a new push to allow cities to dump that salt, chemical, and sand-laden stuff back in the water. That's tomorrow. And Anthony, before we go, earlier today I asked some of our Twitter followers to tweet us one thing they actually loved about the snow, and I just wanted to read two of them real quick. One was from SW Mama. She said, "I love it because my husband works from home and I get to spend time with him and he helps with the babies." Brother Lawrence tweeted, "Snow is a reminder that we are not God."
Hey, how about that? Radio Boston is a production of WBUR with regular contributions from The Angle at boston.com. I'm Anthony Brooks.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.